This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here, live from the NVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. Movies from the 80s have inspired and shaped the movie landscape to what it is today. So joining me today to talk about some of the top movies from the 80s and what made them stand out is Hollywood movie expert at ThoughtCo.com, Christopher McKittrick. Thanks for joining me, Chris.
Thank you for having me, Mason.
Now, one of the things I want to talk about with you is 80s movies, and most of the reason is because we have a lot of reboots as of late from, you know, 80s stuff. So I wanted to go through with you and see what you thought was some of the best 1980 movies out there.
First of all, thank you for having me on again. And I got to say, you gave me five choices to pick. And being that I am a child of the 80s and grew up watching these movies, I picked five and have second-guessed the five that I've picked ever since I have sent you the list. So I could have made this a list of 50 great movies of the 80s, but I tried to pick ones that really, really touched my heart as I was growing up.
Let's start with number five. What did you think was the number five?
I put for number five, Die Hard.
Okay. All right. I could see that. The modern day Christmas story. Well, why did you think Die Hard should be on this list, though? I mean, it's an action movie. Everybody loves Bruce Willis, but why is it up there?
One of the genres that really defines the 80s and into the early 90s were these sort of muscle-bound action films. And we saw that, you know, lots of Stallone movies, lots of Schwarzenegger movies, lots of Willis movies, Jean-Claude Van Damme movies. But I really think out of all of them, the best real action movie of the 80s was Die Hard, without a doubt, because it is, first of all, an extremely clever concept with lots of twists and turns, especially with the reveal of the villain. And one of the greatest things, and this has been lost in the subsequent Die Hard sequels, is that John McClane is just like an everyday guy caught in a terrible situation. Like, we see him cry, we see him bleed, we see him wish that he was, you know, somewhere else that day. He's got troubles in his marriage. So it takes like the action hero and kind of deconstructs it in a way that's really, really funny and really, really human. And it's and ever since recently, there's been the debate whether or not Die Hard is a Christmas movie, too. I fall on the side that it's definitely a Christmas movie, but I can see why others argue that it's not.
Yeah, I think it's a Christmas movie, only because I get kind of tired of the Christmas story and, you know, Miracle on 31st Street or 34th Street. I get kind of tired of that, and I think Die Hard should replace everything. What was your number four?
My number four on here was Back to the Future. And it's really on my list the only thing that's like a very distinct comedy, which I felt kind of torn about because there's so many great comedies of the 80s. You know, you talk about the John Hughes movies, talk about Fast Times at Ridgemont High, talk about even going back to the very early 80s, the Blues Brothers, and then so many good Eddie Murphy movies coming to America in the 80s. But if I had to pick one comedy of the 80s that I think was just fantastic, it's Back to the Future. First of all, it's a movie that has really stood the test of time. So many people love this movie and love the Back to the Future series. And I think it touches something that we all kind of think about, like, what were our parents like when they were teenagers? You know, our parents always tell us stories about, all our elders tell us what life was like when they were a kid or when I was your age. But here, Marty McFly, played by an amazing Michael J. Fox, gets the opportunity to see what his parents were like in high school. And there's so many great contrasts between the 1950s and the 1980s that the movie makes a lot of great jokes out of. And, of course, the one that could never be repeated today is the fact that the Ronald Reagan joke that everyone remembers about who's president in 1985, Ronald Reagan, the actor. It's probably one of the best jokes in any movie of the 80s, and it's just such a great combination between comedy, special effects, and just great storytelling.
You forgot to add time travel. I think Back to the Future is a great intro to time travel. It's not that complex, but it gives you just enough so that you can dip your toe in it, and if you like the genre, you can jump off into other time travel-like-esque movies.
That's a really great point, yeah. And, you know, there were a couple other time travel movies in the 80s. Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure is another good one. But you're right. Back to the Future really makes the time travel concept pretty basic. You know, you go to this time, you go to that time, and what you do in the past can affect the present day and the future and all that. So that's what's really great about it. And you're right, there are so many other time travel things that get really, really technical. So Back to the Future is a great, like, primer for those types of movies.
What was your number three?
Blade Runner.
Oh.
Which we just saw the sequel to Blade Runner 2049, that came out this past year. Blade Runner is one of those movies that is generally regarded now as one of the greatest sci-fi films ever made. But one thing that people don't seem to remember is it didn't do all that well when it came out. But it's sort of funny because it's one of the most influential movies ever made in terms of science fiction and production design, and it has the movie, everything in the movie has a very, very distinct look in terms of the way it's designed. A part of that came from the phenomenal graphic designer Sid Mead, who is known as a visual futurist, because one of his main goals in his career has always been to try to plan what the future is going to look like. And in Blade Runner, he really hit on a lot of stuff that we did see in the future. It's got Harrison Ford at the top of his game, and he's going to show up a little bit later on my list too. And it really is one of those movies that defined a genre and has gone on to be so influential to everybody who has seen it.
So which did you prefer, the new one or the old one?
I got to go with the old one, but I did like the new one in the sense that it built off the original really, really well. And it's one of the things that I thought was very, what I really enjoyed about Blade Runner 2049 is you really had to see the first one to understand it. They didn't do a lot of backstory to try to bring people up to speed. I get why you need to do that, but it seemed very, very fresh building off of what was in the previous film.
All right. What was your number two?
Number two, and I mentioned this man earlier, Arnold Schwarzenegger, is the original Terminator.
Mm. Why Terminator?
So one of the other great genres of the 80s is the horror genre. And a lot of people think of Terminator, and they think of Terminator 2, which, in my opinion, Terminator 2 is one of the top movies ever made, if not the best action movie ever made. But the original Terminator was much more of a horror film. You know, we had this young woman who was, again, with time travel, going to give birth to the savior of mankind. And while that's, and the enemies send back a killer robot to make sure that she dies and she never has that child. And it's a horrific idea. What was amazing about Terminator is it really ties into a lot of the other horror connections that we see in movies that we generally think of when we think of 80s horror, like Friday the 13th. You know, these movies where somebody's pursuing you, slasher movies. The Terminator does that, but very, very, very much in a sci-fi realm. And as a special effects guy, I really love seeing the robot effects in that movie, you know, years before we have CGI. It's one of those things that, you know, we still have Terminator movies coming out every few years, and, you know, it never really got better than the first and second Terminator movie, because they really hit on kind of that fear of being pursued that's been done in so many other 80s horror movies. But what I like about Terminator is it combines horror and sci-fi.
You know, I'm not a fan of horror movies, but I think it's really funny you call Terminator a horror movie. I always considered it just like, if I was like maybe suspense, but definitely like mostly sci-fi. And that's another time movie that I just love.
Right. And that's a good point. Yeah, it's very much a suspenseful movie. And I could see thinking it, because a lot of times if you think of horror, you think of something more gory, like Friday the 13th. But there's a lot of similarities there where you're being pursued by the unstoppable killer. You know, how do you stop this? So yeah, it's a little bit of the toe in the horror movie, a little bit in the suspense. You know, it regardless, super entertaining.
Yeah, absolutely. What was your number one?
All right, my number one is probably my all-time favorite movie, and it is Raiders of the Lost Ark.
I can't believe Raiders of the Lost Ark out of all the movies. Okay, I have to, why? Why Raiders of the Lost Ark? I mean, I love it too, but number one?
Well, the reason why I picked Raiders of the Lost Ark is I think it's one of those examples of that, of a movie when every single person working in the movie was at the top of their game. It was Harrison Ford when he was at the peak of his growing stardom. You know, we all like seeing him as Han Solo in Star Wars, but Indiana Jones to me is a character that he really, really put his stamp on. I like to compare Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark, to Die Hard a lot. Indiana Jones is kind of like a superhero, but we see him get hurt. We see him fail. We see him improvise to solve problems. And it's really clever how well the script is written. George Lucas, of course, is best known for Star Wars, but with Raiders of the Lost Ark, him and Steven Spielberg really created this world that is based partially on world history, partially on World War II history, because it takes place in the 1930s, a little bit before World War II started, part on like adventure serials of the previous movie, of previous eras of movies, like back in the 1930 serial movies, where, you know, the stories were pretty straightforward and simple. And that's what I really love about this movie. There's romance in it, there is action, there is suspense. So it's definitely a movie that has really, to me, stood the test of time and has been super influential. And even though there's been other Indiana Jones sequels, some better than others, I really think they hit it out of the park with the first one.
Oh, man. I don't know. For Raiders of the Lost Ark, or I should say the Indiana Jones series in general, I love the Temple of Doom, but I know that's not the most favorite of the Indiana
right.
Jones series. And just, wow, okay. I can see your list, but what about, like, let's say Blues Brothers or Full Metal Jacket? Why were those kind of movies on your list?
Well, again, it's also trying to pare down so many great movies of the 80s to things that I really liked. And what I tried to do in those cases is pick movies that really, really spoke to me personally as I was growing up and have really stuck with me. I could tell you that Full Metal Jacket, as much as I love Stanley Kubrick and all the great movies he made, for Full Metal Jacket, to me, I always saw that as the first 45 minutes is the one of the greatest war movies ever made, because we have the drill instructor and going through basic training is just an amazing sequence. And then the film kind of loses me once we actually get to Vietnam, and that's just me. But I got to say, it is definitely that first 45 minutes, first, I guess, third or half of that movie is just unforgettable. I mean, everybody loves watching the drill sergeant spit out the most hilarious insults to the guys involved. In terms of Blues Brothers is certainly a great film, but I would almost say, even though Blues Brothers came out in 1980, I think of that more as almost a 70s film, because it really is tied into that original cast of Saturday Night Live and all those Blues Brother moments on the Saturday Night Live in the late 70s. So to me, it feels more like an 80s movie. It feels more like a 70s movie, like Animal House or... So even though it is technically released in 1980, I feel like it's more of a spirit of a 70s film.
Okay, I can see that. You're right about that. When it comes to 80s movies, it seems like they're rebooting everything from the 80s. I don't think it can work that well. One of them is The Heathers. That is a great movie, and it was hilarious in the 80s. And it even, a lot of the jokes back then, you can't really translate it now. I mean, why reboot it if you can't be true to it? Or am I just being wrong about the whole idea of reboots?
Yeah, I think you're on an excellent point here. So, first of all, there are some movies that have gotten some kind of a reboot or revamp from the 80s that definitely worked. Mad Max Fury Road is one of the best movies of the last couple of years. And, you know, there's probably a lot of people when it came out thinking, you know, really, we're going to go back to Mad Max? You know, we need another one of those. But that one really worked. Heathers, I question how it's going to work in this generation, because it's a very dark comedy. And there are certainly things that people, I feel, would get offended with nowadays, as opposed to seeing the humor in it. And I find that kind of challenging for those filmmakers. If they can make it work in a reboot, all the power to them. I just see that as a gigantic challenge to try to make a movie that's to make a comedy that's that dark in today.
I watched it recently, The Heathers, and it was the scene where they killed the two football players, and they made it look like it was a suicide pact between gay lovers. And, right. you know, nowadays, nobody cares if you're homosexual. You can be whatever you want to be. So I don't think they'll be able to do that dark joke. So I'm curious how they're going to work it, because you're right. There's people are going to be offended, or are they going to be like, this is satire? I'm okay with that.
Yeah, really, the one thing you can't control is how your audience takes your movie. Because, I mean, as we've seen time and time again over the history of movies and television shows, sometimes what the filmmaker is trying to intend and present does not come across exactly as they want it to. I mean, we just saw the release of The Disaster Artist, and that talked about how The Room was meant to be a very, very serious movie, and of course, audiences have embraced it totally differently.
You know, I'm a little curious, what were some of the runner-up movies that didn't make it to your top five?
Oh, man, I don't know how much time you have, but I would definitely say, first of all, I would have to put a John Hughes movie on my list if I was able to go to 10. It would probably be in between Breakfast Club and Ferris Bueller's Day Off, just because John Hughes really revolutionized the way teenagers were presented in film and entertainment. And he gets a lot of credit for it today, and I don't think he got the credit he deserved during his lifetime until people realized, you know, it's really hard to write for adults. To write teenagers and make them sound authentic. We have seen so many times where people try to write teenagers and they just sound like adults talking like teenagers. So it was cool to see that. E.T. is probably the movie that meant so much to me growing up. Yeah, it's a movie that meant so much to me growing up because it's just such a sweet story about a boy and meeting like this friend from a totally different world, and the music is so iconic. There's so much about E.T., but I wanted to keep one Spielberg movie, and I had to pick between E.T. and Indiana Jones, and I'm going to go with The Guy with the Bullwhip. In terms of our other ones I put on the list, for more adventure stuff, I mean, The Goonies is so much fun. The Princess Bride is so much fun. I think the number sixth movie, if you gave me one, was Ghostbusters. I don't think, and again, maybe it ties into my love of special effects and science fiction, but I really don't think Ghostbusters has been topped as a science fiction comedy in so many ways. It's just the peak of everything. It's got, again, that Saturday Night Live crew at the top of their game. We got some clever concepts behind it. And really, when we're talking about reboots in the 80s, one of the things I think we've lost a bit when we go back to a lot of reboots is that in the 80s, there were so many clever concepts behind films. Ghostbusters is just this brilliant, wacky concept. Back to the Future is a brilliant, wacky concept. Same with Heathers. Heathers is something that hasn't been done before. And one thing I think we miss in this era of reboots, even though reboots can be really good and sequels can be really good, a lot of those original film ideas.
You know, but after a while, it kind of feels like everything's been done, so I can see why they would reboot.
Sure.
One of the reboots I'm waiting for is Labyrinth. I don't know who would play the Goblin King, but because David Bowie was wonderful in that role. But I'm waiting for Labyrinth. I just absolutely love that movie.
And again, that's one that you have to be very careful, because you just pointed out it's David Bowie is so tremendous in that role. It's trying to find somebody to do that again. I mean, but we're talking about the same industry where people said, how could anyone play the Joker better than Jack Nicholson, another great 80s movie, the first Batman, and yet somehow Heath Ledger found a way to do it in a totally different way that is just as beloved as, if not more, than Jack Nicholson's version. So it's, you're right, it's trying to find a way to make no one wants to see someone pretend to be David Bowie, you know what I mean? But we do want to see something that puts something new on it that can still be familiar, but not a copy.
Well, thank you so much, Chris, for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. And for those listening, where can they find more information about you?
Sure. I write about Hollywood film for ThoughtCo.com, and you can see my articles up there, and I'm always writing different ideas, different lists, and different thoughts on the history of Hollywood, and especially movies that, like the 80s movies that I and you both love.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's MASOMVERAPAINE.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.